Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's Nick Wright. Danny Cannell joining us. Good morning,
Danny.
Hold
up, Danny. Man. How are we doing?
Across for the handshake.
Right? Absolutely. Awesome. Thank you for coming in, brother. It's great to see you.
Great to be here.
We have a great Thursday show for you today, and we're going to jump right in by talking about the Dallas Cowboys. Yet more drama in Dallas. Cowboys are heading into Week 11. A little shy of preseason expectations, not what you'd expect when your quarterback is having a tremendous year, when your running back is Ezekiel Elliott, and when, for the most part, you've been healthy. But at 5-4, and in a tie with Philly in the NFC East, and with Jerry Jones making comments about the run game, everyone in Dallas is on alert, including Zeke himself. He was asked if he was surprised by where the team is right now. Take a listen to what he had to say.
I mean, I wouldn't say to be surprised. I mean, this is NFL football, so I mean, every team is good. Every team has great players, and if you don't go out there and handle your business, you're gonna lose ball games. So I mean, I think it's all on us in this locker room. It's all about us. It's all on us to turn it around. It's all on us to go out there and play better.
Nick, Ezekiel Elliott may not be surprised, but are you a little surprised by their 5-4 record at this point?
How they've looked compared to their record, their stats compared to their record, and their stature in the league because of their record, I think all of it's at least somewhat surprising, especially given the level of play from Dak Prescott, who going into the year, that was the biggest question mark I had about this football team was, is that we knew Dak was going to get paid. Now, he oddly has not yet been paid, but he was going to be paid like one of the top 6 or 7 quarterbacks in football. I didn't think he could play up to that standard. Thus far this season, he has, and yet they're 5-4. Now, I think most people would say they should at the very least be 6-3 because everyone's going to circle that Jets game. And all year long, they're going to circle that Jets game. Mm-hmm. And they 100%, you know, they absolutely should circle the Jets game, and they don't have a game to offset it. It's not like, well, we lost to the Jets, but we did beat Green Bay, a Green Bay team that looks like one of the best in football, if not the best in football. Their best win, of course, is the home game against Philly, which I think they were the favorite. Not I think. I know they were the favorite, and they're supposed to win that game. And so when you look at this team, Zeke can't say it, and I don't think he should say it, but it's hard to find a specific reason they've underachieved, at least to a degree, if not a large degree, that doesn't involve the coaching staff. Because Dak's playing better than I could have expected. Zeke's numbers are a tick off his career averages, but he's still, Danny, on pace for 1,400 yards rushing, which is a great season by any running back standards. And they have not been ravaged by injuries. They've had injuries here and there, but they haven't been a team that's just been ruined by injuries like the Chargers were early in the year, like Kansas City was dealing with early, about the quarter pole of the season. And so why do you start slow? Why can't you win close games? Why are you slightly underachieving? Those are all coaching issues to me. Zeke can't say it, but that's where I'd lay the blame for the Cowboys being at least 20% below record-wise expectations where they should be.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with everything you said. The Jets game is the one thing that was a surprising loss, especially not only because it was the Jets this year, but because of when it came. They had lost 2 in a row, backs against the wall in a must-win situation, and they come to New York and lay an absolute egg against one of the worst teams in the league. That was surprising in itself. But as far as where they are, 5-4, 6-3, there's not a huge difference there. If you look at Jason Garrett's tenure, throughout his tenure as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, it's always been around 8-8, 9-7. So they're on track exactly for what they've been. Now, he has been better since Dak and Zeke's rookie year when they went 13-3. Then you followed that with the 10-6. This year they're 5-4. So as I totally agree with you with if you look at why they're here, I do put it on the head coach and I put it on Jason Garrett. And the only thing that I think is a little bit concerning if you look at the Cowboys, show me a game they've won that they weren't supposed to.
Exactly.
You know, and like that's not a very good team. That's a good team, but it's not a great team. So like, can we take them seriously throughout the rest of the season as a very serious playoff contender? I have very big doubts about
that.
And
this is where the schedule matters, is that you look at it and you're like, hold on. They have been favored in 7 of their games. They only have 5 wins. They've been underdogs, so all their wins they were supposed to have. 2 of their losses they were supposed to win. And then the 2 games they were underdogs, the game against New Orleans where they were a tick underdog.
Yep.
In the game against Green Bay, they end up coming up short. That's the biggest disappointment. In fact, you know what? While I'm saying that, I realize they were actually a slight favorite against Green Bay. So they've been the Vegas favored in 8 of their 9 football games, and yet they sit here today with only 5 victories.
Danny said they're a good team. They're not a great team. Why aren't they a great team? Dak Prescott's having a great year. Ezekiel Elliott is basically on par. They got Amari Cooper, who's been a little banged up, still playing. For the most part, they've been healthy. Why aren't they a great team?
I think there's a couple things. I think defensively, they're weaker than we would think. Offensively, they're doing exactly what they would expect. But at some point, you do have to look at the coaching staff, which is kind of rare. We don't do this a lot with a lot of teams. We want to put a lot of blame on the players,
The players play.
Absolutely, they do. And that's the case most of the time. But I do think Jason Garrett should be held to task in this situation specifically, saying, all right, when are you going to be a reason that this team takes the next step? And I think it does. When you see a team come out flat, I do think that falls on the coaching staff, right? To have a pulse of the team. Where are you in preparation? Where are you mentally the night before the game, the week leading up to the game? Because, and the Cowboys did flip the switch in that game. They made it close at the end, but they came out flat, which to me, yes, it's on the leaders of that team in that locker room, but that's got to fall on Jason Garrett's shoulder.
And at this point in the season, and to use a somewhat famous quote, you are what your record says you are, and there's 10 teams in football with a better record than Dallas. San Francisco, Seattle, Green Bay, New Orleans, Minnesota in the NFC, New England, Baltimore, Houston, Kansas City, Buffalo in the AFC. But what's more concerning is look at the other 5-4 teams and either what they've been through or what we think of them. There is the Oakland Raiders, who I think are an optimistic 5-4.
Sure.
A team that has overachieved. Pittsburgh, they lost their quarterback for the year. Indy lost their quarterback right before the year and then lost a game because their secondary quarterback, Jacoby Brissett, couldn't play and Brian Hoyer came out and was terrible this past weekend. Carolina, they lost their quarterback for the year. They actually, record-wise, got better since then. They're 5-4. Then there are, you could argue, the 3 most disappointing teams that are still relevant at this point in the season. So not Cleveland, not Atlanta. The Los Angeles Rams, who we place, to me, a ton of that blame on Todd Gurley's injury and Jared Goff's deterioration. The Philadelphia Eagles, who have been inexplicably mediocre all year. And the Dallas Cowboys. Like, all 5-4s are not created equal. Oakland, Pittsburgh, Carolina, Indy, I think have to feel pretty good about being 5-4. Those 3 other teams, Philly, the Rams and the Cowboys, have to feel like, really, this is the best we can do through 9 games?
And let me just add something to what you just said. Of all the NFC teams up until this point, only the Niners have had an easier schedule than the Cowboys have played so far. So when you look at that 5-4, you factor that into it. Do you think they have enough to make a run now?
I think they have enough. So I thought coming into the season they were going to win the NFC East. They're in position to do that. But when you look at how they played against teams outside of the NFC East, they're 1-4, and the one win outside of the NFC East is the Miami Dolphins. Like, they're just, I don't know how seriously you can take them against the other teams that are good, like the Packers, like the Saints, like the Seahawks, or the 49ers. They're just, it's hard to picture them taking that next step from what we've seen this year, because it just hasn't happened.
And to your point about the schedule, Jenna, to me right now, if the NFL season was a 400-meter dash, the Cowboys had the outside lane. And so they start to where it looks like they're ahead. But if going into the last half of the race, they're even with someone who's on the inside lane, they're dead.
Great way
and
to
so,
describe
and,
that.
And right now, Philly, they've already had their tough part of the schedule. So they might be even in the standings, but Philly has the far cleaner path to the division. That's why I think Philly, not just because they were my preseason pick, because they're my preseason pick for the 2 seed, and that is out the window. They have way underachieved. The Cowboys are right now, to me, the clear underdogs in the division, even though they're undefeated in the division and they beat Philly straight up, because what they're going to have to do to win the division the rest of the way is something they have not been able to do up to this point, which is win a game they're not supposed to, beat a true quality opponent. They haven't shown me the ability to do that. And that ultimately is more disappointing than the record itself because of what it says about the team, given the level of talent and the fact that Jerry Jones gave them all the resources. All those guys, it's not like, man, we can't bring Zeke. We're going to trade Zeke because we can't pay him.
Everybody's here.
They brought everyone back. They said, we'll deal with 2022 problems in 2022. 2022. Let's try to win right now. And instead, they're right in that mediocre range where they don't want to be.
The next 2 weeks, two road trips at Detroit and at New England. You're going to find out a lot more about this Dallas Cowboy team. The problem is, I think they probably go 1-1. And we're having the exact same discussion in a few weeks.
Good. It's good for ratings. Yeah. Steelers and Browns. So Baker Mayfield and company finally getting the big win last week, that over the Buffalo Bills. Meanwhile, Pittsburgh has won four straight games. Browns 3-point favorites in this one, according to Fox Bet. What do you think, Nick? Will Cleveland start making a run at the play? I can't believe I'm asking this. But we listen, at this point where they are in the division, could they actually put something together and make a playoff run?
Well, not they can't make a run to win the division, but a run to the playoffs through the division
because
they have four left against Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. Yeah, I think it's on the board. I think they'll win tonight. I also think it would be the worst thing that could happen to them. I think going on a run at this season would be what they need is two things more than anything in the world. Freddie Kitchens gone and Baker Mayfield humbled. And if they turn 3-6 into, let's just say, best case scenario, they're 9-6 going into the final week of the regular season or 8-7, you know, alive if things fall their way, then I would imagine maybe they hold on to Freddie, and certainly Baker can justify this season by some bad luck here, the bad calls at the goal line against the Rams, the crazy start to New England, what I'm doing works.
And maybe it gets amplified a little bit.
100%. I don't think you can cross them off. This is something our friend Cousin Sal does on his podcast all the time, which is each week you find a new team, cross them off like you know they're dead. I don't think the Browns are a cross-off team yet, but I do think that it is in their long-term best interest to fall apart even further. And I don't know that that's going to happen, but that's what needs to happen if this team's going to eventually be the team I thought, Danny, they could be this season.
How do we know if they don't go on a run that Freddie Kitchens may not be the right guy? Like, how do we know that maybe he proves himself worthy? Maybe he's cut his teeth? Because we all knew experience was going to be something that Freddie Kitchens lacked and he had to get this season. And it's hurt them a lot this season at times. If they go on this run, how do we know that he's not the answer and you don't keep him there? So I would push back a little bit on that. I totally agree with Baker Mayfield needed to be humbled. And you're like, what more do you need to see happen to Baker to be humbled? I don't know if he ever gets humbled. I mean, I think that's just who he is. He's cocky. He's brash. It's one of the things we love about him when he's playing great. I thought he could use the same thing. I don't know if it ever gets knocked out of him, especially when you still see him talking when they've had the season they have had to this point. The thing that's interesting about the Browns is it's kind of the flip side of the Cowboys we were just talking about. Like, they have their schedule, and I don't think the NFL schedule has ever had this type of situation.
Where so many teams are either front heavy or back heavy.
Yes, and we see this in college football all the time, and that's why we always ask, well, who have you beaten in college football? And for the first time that I can remember, we're actually doing this in the NFL where it is who have you beaten and who have you lost to, conversely. And the Browns have actually lost to some really good teams. I look at their schedule and say maybe the Broncos' loss was their low point of the season. And they use that as something to galvanize them and bring them together and say, you know what? We are going to go on a run because the back end of their schedule, winnable games all the way throughout. So I think a playoff run for that wild card spot is more than reasonable to expect the Browns to do that. You got to remember, there's still a ton of talent on this team. And you look at one simple stat, turnover margin. They are 28th on the league, in large part because Baker Mayfield at one point was leading the NFL. He's still second right now with 9 interceptions on the year. Last couple games, he's eliminated those. And guess what happens? They play better. They're in a position to win. So if you can fix some of these problems against teams you should start beating, why not? Why can't they make a run?
But as much as you want to see Baker get humbled and you want to see them fix things up, a lot of that stuff comes when you lose. Because when you win, most of that gets swept under the rug.
Yes.
You move to the next week. Hey, we won. We'll figure it out. We obviously are doing something right. They can't address all the little problems that turn into sort of, you know, big failures for them overall. But I just want to focus on Baker for a second. Mm-hmm. Well, are you buying him as a potential star from what you've seen? If Freddie Kitchens could potentially turn things around, if Baker gets humbled, does he change the trajectory of where his second season's going?
Listen, I'm not going to abandon what I saw from Baker over the previous 3 years. His second to last year at Oklahoma, when he set the all-time college football efficiency record. His last year at Oklahoma, where he broke his own record and won the Heisman Trophy. And his rookie year with the Browns, when he set the single season rookie touchdown passing record, even though he didn't start the whole year, and even though that team had immense turnover in the coaching ranks. To me, a bad 9-week stretch cannot erase that. A bad 16-week stretch cannot erase that. So even if he just continues to, on the trajectory he's been on for the majority of this year, I still will hold on to my Baker stock. Now, I'm not buying more of it. I feel like I have ample amounts of Baker Mayfield stock. And I think guys, it's rare that guys' paths don't have a major bump in them. The thing with Baker is his path is so unique, and at every turn he's been doubted, and at every turn he's been able to correctly say, bleep you, I was right. I'm better than you said. I'm better than you could have ever imagined. Watch me go say, oh, I have to walk on at Texas Tech. How about I leave and go become the Heisman Trophy winner at Oklahoma? Like, just you go from a walk on to starting quarterback at Texas Tech, you were right. He was right times 10. Oh, you think I shouldn't be the number one quarterback taken in this draft? How about I set the rookie touchdown passing record? So when you have that level of people legitimately doubting you and then you always being right, that breeds part of who he is. Part of him is a natural, I'm sure he was born this way, a little chip on his shoulder. Part of it is learned and earned by what he's done. That's why I bring up the humbling, because I know some people will say Baker will always be Baker. He's never had a moment like this. Like so cross sport real quick, it's interesting to see Dwight Howard, after legitimately being humbled, now have a new outlook. Some guys can't do it. My guy Mello, it looked like he couldn't do it. He got humbled and he still could not adjust. And so I want to see what Baker looks like if he goes through failure for the first time. That's what this season potentially is going to be.
Look how long it took Dwight Howard, though, and how far he had to go,
sure,
what he lost, you know, as far as stardom, good, you know, good play, all those types of things. I don't know if it's enough. I will say this, Baker Mayfield, as far as the brash cockiness, I covered him his first game, the first start at Texas Tech. He was playing against SMU. It was Friday Night Football. And I remember Cliff Kingsbury saying, hey, this is a walk-on, but I think you guys are going to be impressed with what he does. He had 4 touchdown passes, you know, over 400 yards. And guess what he was doing on the field? He was like celebrating all over, talking a ton of trash. And we were like, oh, this kid's going to take the world by storm. He is never, you're never going to lose that aspect from him. Where I think what's changed a little bit with Baker Mayfield, and has anybody questioned, is he the right quarterback for the Browns for the future? No. And I think that'd be a foolish question because of the things that you mentioned. I think that was the thing that was overlooked were two things. One, the inexperience of Freddie Kitchens as a head coach has really affected Baker Mayfield's development. And the other thing, we all just assumed, hey, Odell, Jarvis, you're going to be winging it all over the place. We forgot about an offensive line that was really battered and not very good early in the season, and that has taken its toll. And I don't care what quarterback you are across the league, unless you're Lamar Jackson or somebody who can run around and has elite speed where NFL players can't get you, it's going to impact your play. And I think that's had a major impact on Baker's play.
Well, that last point is a really important one. Even if his personality doesn't change, one thing this year should have taught him is he is not a good athlete by NFL standards.
Right.
By NFL standards, he cannot escape. He cannot do.
And he's not tall enough to not be able to or not need to escape.
And so he has to. A lot of people said, you know, take a page out of Russell Wilson's book. It really needs to be more Drew Brees' book. Russell can escape. Mm-hmm. Drew Brees really cannot, has found a way not to need to. And Baker this year, you've seen a lot of times where it seems like he thinks, I can get to the edge. No, you cannot, young man. You are about to be chased down. That's more on the field stuff than mental stuff, but that's been a big part of his lack of success as well, Jenna.
My favorite time to evaluate a quarterback is after they've had a rough patch. Everybody can do it and go out there and everything's great and you're the stud. When you get questioned, when people wonder, hey, are you the future, and you respond, that's when you become a true franchise quarterback.
You'll never be able to evaluate Patrick Mahomes that way.
Maybe not.
On to the Cowboys, where at any point over the last 10 years, this question has always been relevant. Is Jason Garrett on the hot seat? And with Dallas sitting at 5-4, the question this year is Jason Garrett on the hot seat? Cowboys center Travis Frederick isn't worried, saying, quote, I don't think there's any reason to believe people don't have confidence in him. Nick, should Garrett lose his job if the Cowboys miss the playoffs?
Oh, yes, absolutely. If they miss the playoffs,
wait, is it on the board? He loses the job even if they make the playoffs.
Maybe.
Oh, absolutely. I would say absolutely. If they sneak into the playoffs because the Eagles never get it together
and get bounced,
and they win the division at 9-7, and then the 5 seed, whether that's San Francisco or Seattle, goes to Jerry World and puts a whooping on them, then I would fire him then too. I mean, Jason Garrett. In the NFL, teams tend to have too quick of a trigger on this stuff. The Cowboys have been the exact opposite. They have given Jason Garrett more time than anyone could say is reasonable. And I, by the way, I don't think there's ever been a moment where he had to have been fired before. But if they miss the playoffs this year or get bounced in the first round, then no one can say he wasn't given a fair shot. I just quickly, Danny, I just want to show the audience that here are the 6 longest tenured coaches in the NFL. There's Belichick, he's in a class by himself.
Yes.
Harbaugh, Carroll, Tomlin, Peyton. All of them have at least 8 playoff runs. All of them have been to a Super Bowl. All of them have won a Super Bowl. And then there's Jason Garrett, who has been a coach since 2010, just like Sean, just like everyone on that list has been a coach since at least 2010. He has 2 playoff wins, 0, forget Super Bowl appearances, NFC championship game appearances. If you right now, with the quarterback playing the way he is, Zeke in the fold, all pro offensive linemen, you didn't lose a single significant contributor in free agency. Hell, you added Michael Bennett midstream in the season. And Philly is having an anomaly year, or at least an odd year to me, where they are underachieving across the board and dealing with major injuries. If that's not enough to get you to 10-11 wins and at least where you were last year, the second round of the playoffs, that's got to fall on the head coach and they have to make a change.
But Jerry has been loyal to a fault.
Why?
It's been his guy because he's a puppet for Jerry Jones. Jerry, if he wants a coordinator fired, he does it because whatever Jerry wants, he runs it through Jason Garrett and gets it done. And he played there. He's got a lot of, personal attachment there. And if you talk to any player that has played for Jerry Jones, they wax poetic about what a great owner and has how loyal he is, which can be a good thing, but I think in this circumstance it could be to a fault, which makes me wonder if the Cowboys, if the best case scenario for them, because if they're on the cusp, let's say they do sneak in, they win a bad NFC East, and then they do get bounced, I'm not so certain that Jerry's going to pull the trigger on Jason Garrett and part ways with him. If they don't make the playoffs, I do think he will. But what if you're in that tweener spot, which you've been almost the entirety of Jason Garrett's career, which is pretty mediocre?
This is what makes me so angry. There's such a disconnect between what Jerry Jones supposedly stands for and how he runs this organization and how he's in front of the cameras after every game and how badly he wants to win. But he'll be okay with Jason Garrett because he's a yes man. And it's been that way for the last 8-9 seasons, and we keep saying, but he keeps saying yes. Well, at some point, that graphic you showed, they're going to need more numbers besides 0 and 0.
Well, I guess do you think
it's a done deal if they make the playoffs and are bounced in the first round?
I do, because I think that if that wasn't the case, he would have gotten a contract extension. Mm. Because I don't think Jerry, this offseason, didn't give him a contract extension because he was worried they would miss the playoffs. I think Jerry thought it's an impossibility we miss the playoffs. We've got our quarterback, we've got our running back, we've got the whole offensive line, we've got a season of Amari Cooper, we've done all these things, we made minor offseason acquisitions that turned into big ones like Randall Cobb. I don't think Jerry was saying, I'm not giving him an extension in case we miss the playoffs. I think Jerry was saying, I'm not giving him an extension in case we are stuck in neutral, in case we're in the same position or slightly worse than last year. And in a slight defense of Jason Garrett leading up to this season, there hasn't been a clear and obvious exit point, right? The only awful year they had was the year Romo got hurt, not the time Dak was there, obviously. Then Romo got hurt again. They go 13-3 with Dak. The next year, they win 9 games, but everything's laid on Zeke's suspension. Last year, Jason Garrett was going to be fired. But then you win 8 of 9 and a playoff game, and it's like, okay, we're on the uptick. But that's why he didn't get the extension, and that's why this year he's absolutely coaching for his job. And what I wonder if it damages the Cowboys is how much of that is bouncing around his head when he's calling these football games. When you have a 2nd and 2, down 4, Dak is absolutely on fire, but you know Jerry has said this team runs through Zeke, and Zeke is the guy you end up giving the ball to on consecutive downs. That's no way to coach a football team, but I feel like that's how Jason Garrett's been coaching this football team, which is one of the reasons they've been one of the more disappointing teams in the league.
You're right, there's been no exit ramp, but for the Cowboys, there should have been an element of the years teach much, which the days never know, the years as a collective whole. But just a quick anecdote, a GoFundMe page created by one of the fans in Dallas is going around where they're raising money to pay off the rest of Jason Garrett's
contract. Well, luckily, they don't got much to pay off left.
Right.
They
didn't give him the extension. Almost done. All right, let's move on to one of the marquee matchups this weekend. Texans and Ravens, not just two red-hot division leaders, but two of the hottest quarterbacks in the game. Deshaun Watson, so good. 18 touchdowns, only 5 picks. And Lamar Jackson, man, turning heads every single week. 15 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, and oh yeah, running for almost 80 yards per game. When asked about comparisons to Deshaun Watson, Lamar said, quote, I play Lamar Jackson ball. I don't play anybody else's ball. Nick, which quarterback would you rather have, Deshaun Watson or Lamar Jackson?
All right, this is a torturous question because I love Lamar. I love how he's handled himself. I love how he hasn't allowed some of the nonsense surrounding him before the draft to pull him down. And even in the moments where the adults in the room around him seem to be being caught up in the moment, he isn't. There's a great moment this weekend on the sideline with John Harbaugh where Harbaugh grabs him and says, because of you, kids are going to be wearing number 8 jerseys for 20 years. And Lamar, the kid, says, Coach, I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about winning this game. Like, so he's, and I think he is going, I don't know if he's going to be great for a decade, but I'm very confident he's going to be sensational for the next half decade. So I say all that to say this, I'd still take Deshaun. Deshaun was the guy I wanted my Chiefs to draft instead of some kid out of Texas Tech, Patrick Mahomes. Now, I'm very happy with Patrick Mahomes.
Yes.
Deshaun is one of, and you can speak to this far better than I can, Danny, one of the greatest college football players I've ever seen. I don't think it's hyperbole, especially given who he played against, forget the ACC, but in the college football playoff in back-to-back years. And Deshaun has never had a downtick. He was amazing his opening 5 games of his career, pops his ACL in practice. Last year is running for his life at a near unprecedented rate because of mismanagement by the Texans, still drags them to the postseason. And this year, they thought they upgraded the offensive line, kind of, but he's still running for his life a lot. Bill O'Brien's still the guy pulling the strings in an odd fashion.
Don't get you
and
started.
He is spectacular. And so to me, Deshaun is a safer bet, not only long-term, but right now, every single week, I'm confident Deshaun Watson is going to be an A-minus quarterback or above. Lamar this year has had more A-plus moments, but I still feel, and it's not a knock, I still feel this year he's more likely to have a C-minus game out of nowhere than Deshaun, so it's very close, but I'd take Deshaun.
I'm going to go Lamar Jackson. It's no knock against Deshaun Watson. Isn't it kind of crazy where we've come, where when Dabo Sweeney compared him to Michael Jordan, said he had Michael Jordan qualities, we all laughed and said, oh, that's just Dabo pumping up his own player. But he's actually probably closer to being right than any 100%. Of us ever would have guessed he would have been. That being said, when I look at Lamar Jackson, I do think somewhat you can game plan for Deshaun Watson in that offense. And I don't care who it is, Bill Belichick, give me your best defensive coordinator. You can scheme up whatever you want for Lamar Jackson, and you might have the perfect defense called because of his escapability, because of his athleticism, because of his speed, you could still be wrong because he's going to make you pay. And that dynamic terrifies every single defensive coordinator. You literally cannot defend it. So I would say from that aspect, Lamar Jackson is more dangerous. He's scarier because if he is having an off day in the pass game, which I do think he's still a little bit erratic, then he can compensate for it with an ability to just flat out make plays.
And Danny, you were on this with Lamar going into the year. Like I was rooting for Lamar going into the year, but I wasn't yet buying stock. I thought, hey, listen, he was awesome last year in what he did, but the playoff game scared me a bit. Why were you so high on him going into the season, even before we saw that opening game against Miami with the perfect pass?
Because he's a good passer. Like I don't think anybody gave him credit for what he was doing at Louisville with a coach. coach in Bobby Petrino who was actually challenging him and having have NFL style concepts. And he actually is really accurate with the football in the shorter passing game. If you look at his completion percentage within 10 yards with balls not thrown, you know, 10 yards or closer to the line of scrimmage, he's actually really adept at picking defenses apart, similar to what Tom Brady does. Now, I'm not saying he's Tom Brady yet, but I think he's a natural thrower of the football. And I don't think anybody gave him credit by that because they were so distracted by his insane running ability. Here's the other reason. Do you realize Joe Burrow is incredible, right? The college, you know, the LSU quarterback who was taking the world by storm. Maybe the number one quarterback in the draft. Do you realize Lamar Jackson is younger than Joe Burrow?
I know, it's crazy.
Isn't that insane?
2.5 weeks.
Like, I mean, he's still, that's I'm like, we're looking at this quarterback, we're judging him, we're making all these harsh, you know, criticizing comments, and, you know, some people speculated, should he switch positions? I'm like, no, he still has a tremendous amount of upside for where he can go. He's still a baby.
He's 22 years old.
And he's already accomplishing these types of insane things. I do think it is fair to question durability because we haven't ever seen somebody last that plays the way the game he has. But I think we are in a new NFL where guys that played the game like I did, or, you know, Tom Brady or Drew Brees, I think they are dinosaurs. I think they're extinct. And I think guys like these two quarterbacks that are mobile, that can make plays, but also can throw, are the future of the NFL. Well, that's why I think John Harbaugh was spot on.
I was going to ask you if you factored longevity into you picking Deshaun Watson, just because it's almost the safer pick, if you will. You know, he probably has more staying power.
Except for Deshaun's, obviously, now he's suffered a couple major knee injuries.
But none of them really were from
not running around.
Right.
Agreed. I think that in modern sports, the long view has become overrated.
Yeah.
I think that we are too caught up in, and I'll use this example again. I was honestly a little offended as a sports fan that the reaction to Stephen Curry breaking his hand was, you know what, this is actually good for Golden State. Because in 2020, man, what about the right now? Even if they weren't going to be, and I don't love that there is some element of Lamar's greatness that always comes with the asterisk, but what's it going to look like in 2026? Man, this Miami might be underwater in 2026. I don't know what the world's going to look like in 2026. I'm worried about what's he going to look like on December 26th. Is his team going to be fighting for the one seed? Like, so yes, Jenna, if this was Major League Baseball and you could offer him a 12-year fully guaranteed contract, I'd be squeamish. But that's not where the world we're in. And right now, they're both great options. I would go with Deshaun, but I'm not going to argue too harshly on Lamar.
It's a fun conversation.
It is.
You really can't go wrong, either one. So here we go. Back here, first things first. We are joined now by Yahoo Sports senior writer Vincent Goodwill.
What up, man?
How you doing?
Good to see you, brother.
Good morning.
It's Daniel. This is Danny.
Daniel's first time on air.
I thought I was sitting next to a Spider-Man villain this morning.
Oh, wow. Oh,
I know. You got the evil scientist.
Oh, yeah. Listen, Danny's gear's always fresh.
I try to bring it.
He went no turtleneck today.
That's right.
I'm pretty sure he's paid to wear them.
I know.
It looks great.
Good to see you guys.
All right, here we go, Vinny. Let's talk some Lakers and Warriors. No Anthony Davis for L.A. He was dealing with rib and shoulder injuries. No anybody other than D'Angelo Russell for Golden State. They'll be dealing with that all season. No surprise, the Lakers deal the Warriors a 120-94 beatdown. But the bigger story came before the game when Anthony Davis was asked about being the number one guy ahead of LeBron. Take a listen to what he had to say.
It was tough on me because I've done it in New Orleans, you know, but that's because, like, AD, you have to. You know, now it's like, all right, well, we're going to split this 50-50, you know, and when he came out, like, nah. This is yours. Like, I'll play the second guy. We going through you. And I was like, all right, well. And then there's the Lakers. So now AD comes to the Lakers, bigger spotlight, media is bigger. You know, does AD have what it takes? So I'm like, all right, man. I had to really like wrap my head around, okay, this is gonna be a fun year.
Vinny. You really buying LeBron as the number two, Anthony Davis? Okay, so I see, but I know that smile already. I've seen that a couple times this week.
look, that sounds nice. It's a generous gesture, right?
But there's no way that if LeBron is as great as we believe that he is historically, and Nick, you believe he's the greatest player ever, I have him at worst in the top five. You can't look through history and say that there's a top five player historically that takes a back seat while in or near his prime. Kareem, Magic, Michael, LeBron, whoever you put in there, there's never been a person who will willingly take that spot back to number two. Now, you can do 1A, 1B like Shaq and Kobe did post their first championship season, but no, and I think here's why I think LeBron said that. Anthony Davis in that same interview said that. Derrick Rose was like a mentor to me. And Derrick Rose is 5 years removed from LeBron James being drafted. So imagine the esteem that he holds LeBron James in. So LeBron had to make sure that from a generational standpoint,
sure,
that he knew that Anthony Davis felt as invested and also as, you know, welcomed in that new environment with all the drama that happened the year before so that he could be his full self. And LeBron knows that he can't do this for 82 games every night and then 20 games and win a title. He's not at that point of his career anymore, but he's still going to have to be the guy that everything runs through if the Lakers are going to win anything of substance.
All right, so a couple notes here. One is, by the way, shout out to Shams Charania for getting, that was great stuff by him, and he does a great job in general. And I'm not going to parse with you the Kareem Magic thing because I feel like there was a brief period where they were both in their prime and someone had to take a back seat. But I get the point that the overall point that you're making. But this is why LeBron, in addition to top five's generous, into being the greatest player ever, he's the smartest player ever. Anthony Davis needed to hear this. Anthony Davis not under contract after this season. The Lakers got no play if he walks. Now, he is not going to walk. He is not planning on walking. But neither Anthony Davis nor Rich Paul have ever once said he's a lock to re-sign there. Now, I feel he's a lock to re-sign there because LeBron's going to massage and handle this situation perfectly. And Anthony Davis, by the way, will lead the Lakers in points this year. He will be the focal point scoring-wise of their offense. And at one point, because LeBron plans on playing at least this season plus three more, hopes to be four or five more because he's holding on to the hope he could one day be on the same court as his son, even if it's on opposing teams, he knows what the timeline is. At some point, whether that's year 19 or 20 or 21, he won't be in his prime any longer. He's already extended his prime longer than any player other than Karl Malone in NBA history. But at some point, Anthony Davis will actually be the number one. But right now, he can be the number one in name. LeBron still has to run the team. LeBron James still has to run the offense. And LeBron James still has to run the behind-the-scenes aspects, which a lot of this was. It's the same thing with trying to give him his jersey number. It's these little things to make it clear, man.
Psychological warfare, a little bit.
Warfare is not the word I would use. Psychological, whatever a positive version of warfare
sure,
is. Yeah, because
course.
Like the where he wants Anthony Davis to feel like, man, you are not Robin. Because Anthony Davis is too good and too young compared to soon-to-be 35-year-old LeBron James to be Robin, even if when we're watching the games, we're like, that dude's Robin. He's an overqualified Robin. And so, yeah, I don't buy it, but I understand why he did it, and I think it was calculated, and I think it's the absolute right move.
Don't you think it's eerily familiar to what D. Wade told LeBron when they had the big three join and Dwayne Wade said, hey, I'm giving you the keys, man. This is your
after
franchise
run.
Yes, after, and that was when they started to take off. That's when they actually started to win. I think the impact that had on LeBron and he saw what that meant for him personally is probably similar to why he did this with AD, saying, you know what? Because I don't think anybody's going to question who the alpha is in there, who the leader is, who the face of that franchise is, who's going to have their ball in their hands at the end of games. Now, the thing LeBron has always done, he's going to make the best decision, basketball decision, late game situations. So I think from that standpoint, nobody's buying, hey, all of a sudden Anthony Davis is going to be the focal point of this offense just by the nature of positions. But I think this was a significant gesture from LeBron to boost up Anthony Davis's confidence and belief in this team.
At some point, there's going to be, like you said, Nick, there's going to be the day where LeBron is not the greatest. He doesn't take up the most oxygen in the room. And how he adjusts to that is going to play on who plays with him, who plays next to him, and how his career sort of slides on a decline. He's on a decline now, but it's a very slow decline. It's not fast. It's not an Allen Iverson decline. Right. It's not a Carmelo Anthony decline where you notice it just being so obvious. So he's making sure that his career extends more and longer than anybody else's.
Nick, I don't understand. Where is Anthony Davis, besides scoring, the number one on this team?
Oh, that's the only place. It's the only place. And he might be, but he has to be able to have a leadership role empowered by LeBron, if for no other reason than age, then because there are Kuzma's going to be the third leading scorer on this team. I don't know if he's third most important, but he's going to be third leading scorer. Kuzma's going to be able to relate a lot more to Anthony Davis than he is to LeBron off the court. Lifestyle. Like, there is the father of three married element of this, and Anthony Davis has to be empowered in all those ways. And I believe the Lakers are going to win the championship this year, and they can win the championship, and I believe will win the championship with LeBron being the best player on their team and in the league. But if they're going to win multiple championships, at some point, it's going to have to be because Anthony Davis is the best player on their team and in discussion for best player in the league. Because Giannis is only getting better. The Clippers, while I'm not as high on them as others, they at least have a three-year window of extreme relevance. I think the Rockets are scary. Luka is coming like a damn rocket ship. Like, these are, and you're right, LeBron is slowly deteriorating. But I mean, if you were at the peak of Everest and you come down a little bit, you're still at the highest point in the world of anybody. So, like, that's where he is, but at some point, he goes down further. And that's when Anthony Davis has to meet him, you know, on his way to the summit. And he can't do that until two things have happened. One, LeBron has empowered him. And two, Anthony Davis has been on a real playoff run. That's the other element of this we have to wait and see, where how Anthony Davis, I think the best version of Anthony Davis we'll ever see will be the beginning of next season. Whether they win the title or not, once he has the real experience of those 15 to 25 playoff games, what it's like in that cauldron and what he becomes coming out of.
Make no mistake, they can't win if Anthony Davis is playing a subservient role to LeBron. They have to win because he feels like he is on an equal level, if not a higher plane from an all-around standpoint as LeBron. He's going to be the guy defending, blocking shots, setting the defense up. LeBron is not going to play that level of defense, and he's not going to be able to maintain a certain level of play for this entire season and also through the playoff run. Nick, I don't think that we can discount the amount of miles on his body so far and how much that's taken a toll on him to this
point. Same talk you and I had in the beginning. You could be my 1A, I'll be 1, and we move forward. We've got a whole lot of legacies on the line tonight, Thursday Night Football. Browns and Steelers, both teams coming off wins, both craving divisional bragging rights. Keep in mind, many left this Pittsburgh team for dead when Big Ben went down, but they've quietly won 4 in a row. They sit at 5-4. Nick, will the Browns begin run to the playoffs tonight?
You can't cross it off. You can't act like it's impossible because they've got 2 left against Cincinnati, because they have Arizona. I think they still have Miami on the schedule. Like, they absolutely can. And 2 against Pittsburgh, who, while has a winning record, we know is a team that has to win a very specific style of football games. It's not going to blow people out, not with that offense and that quarterback. So it's not impossible, Brian, but I wonder if it'd be good for them. I wonder if the best thing that could happen to the Browns wouldn't be an embarrassing season. Not a season where they rally and get to 8-8, maybe even 9-7, where they can say, hey, half game better than last year. But if they continue on the trajectory they were on prior to the win against Buffalo, because that would, to me, accomplish 2 things that have to happen. One is they would get a new head coach, and the other is you would have a chance at humbling Baker Mayfield, which I think is necessary for him to take the step I thought he was going to take this season.
Well, I would love for them to get an embarrassing season, but they've had embarrassing losses and they still haven't learned their lesson. They've had embarrassing moments and they still haven't learned their lesson. I think the Browns have a much bigger problem than just trying to find embarrassing moments. I think the head coach is an issue. I think the quarterback that hasn't progressed, actually has gone the other way in the second year, is a big time issue. They don't believe that this running running game should lead them. They're thinking that they need to throw the football, and I don't know that that's the case for this football team. When you look at all the talent that's on that team, these are players that Tom Brady would love to have, Carson Wentz would love to have. You're talking about Landry, you're talking about Odell Beckham Jr. They have all the talent that you want. They can't seem to win because they turn the football over. They lack discipline. Now, here's a good thing about the last two games for them. They have 9 combined penalties in the last two games. That's a good thing. That's going in the right direction. They have 0 turnovers in the last two games. That's a good thing. That's going in the right direction. However, you're right about this, their schedule. They have to play the Pittsburgh Steelers twice, and they are one of the best teams in turnover margins in the NFL. That's going to be the issue for the Cleveland Browns.
See, here's where I think the Browns can actually get on this run. And I think they've been a product of some of the unrealistic expectations we had, because when the Odell trade happened, when that went down, everybody was on board. Oh, my goodness. Baker, record-setting season. You know, Freddie Kitchens was the mastermind. We're finding out now, after the fact, that maybe he wasn't the most important factor in last year's success with Baker Mayfield. But there was all this hype and expectations. They fall flat, and what do we love to do? We love to knock them when they're down. They've been under a ton of scrutiny. They've actually lost to some pretty good football teams, which is something you can't say about a lot of teams where their records are fluffed up and they're not, you know, they're actually propped up. This team is probably not that far off of being a pretty decent football team. If they can eliminate some of those turnovers, which they have been atrocious with, Baker specifically, but he stopped as of late throwing it to the other football team, and the schedule, the way it sets up, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility they could get a wild card spot in a wide open AFC.
No team in the league has an easier remaining schedule than the Cleveland Browns right now. I think they play the Bengals twice the rest of the way.
They play the Bengals twice, the Steelers twice, Arizona, Miami, and Baltimore. Baltimore's the best team. Right. They, of course, already beat Baltimore in Baltimore, and that game.
Another thing a lot of other teams haven't been able to do. Yeah. So, I mean, it's in their cards. Like, it's out in front of them. They just, it's a lot of self-inflicting pain that they put on themselves with the penalties and their turnovers and Baker and all that other stuff. But they could do it.
But it's also why at 4-5, I would feel so differently than at 3-6. And that's why you looked at that Denver game.
The Broncos game.
That was the moment where I said, you got, like, rip it up. And you could say, well, what about the Seattle game where they had the 12-point lead? Like, that was a blown game against a great football team. The Rams game early in the year, they didn't play that well, and the Rams aren't that good of a team, and they had opportunities, but at least you're like, okay, how much shame is there really losing to the Rams on national television when you're against that defense, you can't move the football? Understood. It's the Broncos game.
Without Flacco. He wasn't even playing
Right. And not that Flacco is some huge benefit for them, but with a guy who'd never taken an NFL snap, losing that game, you say, okay, like, can we take this team seriously? And here's what wouldn't shock me, honestly. I'm not predicting it, but it wouldn't shock me. That the Browns rally and win the next three. They beat Pittsburgh tonight. They have a long week. They take care of Miami. They then go to Pittsburgh, complete the sweep. They get to 5-5. I'm sorry, that would put them at, right now, they're that would put them at 6-6, pardon me. And then they lose to the 0-12 Cincinnati Bengals. Like, that's the type of team they've been, where if they were to get on a run and start feeling good about themselves, they could absolutely shoot themselves in the foot and undo all of it.
What you're talking about is leadership. You're talking about how do you manage success and also failure. I think this team has done a bad job of managing both. But here's a combined record of the teams that they have left to play, 22-41-1. So they have a good chance to win a lot of those football games. The question is, how do they handle that thing in what we've seen from Freddie Kitchens, what we continue to see from Baker Mayfield talking about things that have nothing to do with winning football games, that concerns me. Those things don't end, and they haven't learned their lesson from what happened in the first game of the season when everyone made them out to be one of the best teams in the AFC, and they got embarrassed. How do you learn those lessons? This week that just passed, Baker is talking about crowd noise, his own team's crowd noise, not about how you win football games and how you will win the games in the future. That concerns me.
Carolina used their first overall pick on Cam Newton back in 2011, and the hope then was that he'd hoist multiple Lombardi trophies. But 9 seasons later, there's no hardware on the shelf, and Cam is banged up. So it appears as if the Cam Newton era in Carolina has come to a close. Cam is reportedly open to being traded this offseason and would welcome being shipped to the Bears. Nick, can Cam still be a franchise quarterback somewhere?
If healthy, absolutely yes. And I'd be very happy for Cam if he did go to the Bears. Bears fans would appreciate him to a level a lot of the fans in Carolina have not recently, and some have never appreciated him, especially given how good the Bears could be with just an average quarterback. And I believe Cam still has the ability to be a top 10 quarterback in this league. I don't think he's going to win another MVP. I don't think he's going to be a top 5 guy in football, but I think he still has the ability to be a force multiplier, excellent quarterback. I think the Panthers are making a grave mistake. I don't think they have the answer at quarterback. I think they have all the other components of a team that's not should not be rebuilding. You went out and got Gerald McCoy. You have Christian McCaffrey, who is brilliant, but we know how short typically, not always, but typically those running back lifespans are. So you want to take advantage of it right now. But we can't be in a league, in my mind, where half of the league has started multiple quarterbacks, where we are searching for the established veteran quarterback who has not fallen off a cliff, and I don't believe Cam has, and just throw Cam out with the bathwater. Like, I think Cam, prior to the TJ Watt hit, Cam had missed 3 games in his career. In his career, TJ Watt then hits him in the pocket, wrecks his shoulder. He plays through it, maybe to his own detriment because it killed his numbers. Then he missed the very end of last year. Then this offseason, a preseason game, the Patriots, he breaks his foot, essentially, Liz Frank. And so if Cam can't move, Cam can't be Cam. And you saw that early in the year. He will have a year to have recovered from the foot, more than a year to have recovered from the shoulder. And that, to me, is still a top 10 quarterback in football.
Yeah, well, here's the problem, though. Cam Newton, what made him special that MVP season was his ability to run the football. Was in short yardage situations, third and fourth down, they were almost unstoppable.
The best short yardage back in football.
Right, and I don't know if you're getting that anymore with Cam Newton because of the injuries that have come into play. Now, if you go out there, let's say you're the Bears, and you bring him in there, and Matt Nagy says, well, we'll roll the dice, we're going to still use him that way. I do think the injuries have to come into play, and it does become concerning, especially when you look at the Carolina Panthers. Remember, there was the play they ran to Christian McCaffrey, and they were on the yard line going in, and they said, hey, we didn't want to run our quarterback anymore. They clearly have seen enough where they're saying, you know what? We don't want to take that risk anymore. It absolutely has to come into the conversation. And if you don't get that Cam, I do have significant doubts about where he is as a top 10. I think top 10 is probably a safe assumption to make, but we haven't seen him perform at that level for an extended period of time without an offense that's calling plays suited to Cam Newton.
I actually totally agree with you that if running is removed from Cam's game, especially the ability to be a four-down offense, which is such a weapon. We are, by the way, we're seeing that in Baltimore.
Yep.
There, John Harbaugh gets it. He gets the numbers. He gets the advantage. And when as long as the rest of the league is still going to be caveman football, and it's like, man, it's 4th-and-1.5. We got a punt. Then having a team that is built where you know you can go for it on 4th down, which opens up the playbook on 3rd down, because that MVP year, he also was a great deep passer.
Yes.
And so many of those deep shots came on ostensible running situations. It's 3rd-and-2, but if you know, well, we're going to go for it on 4th-and-2, you can take deep shots on 3rd-and-2. But Cam's injuries have not taken place with him trying to be mobile.
Right.
TJ Watt, he's in the pocket, and the Liz Frank injury in the preseason game, so his offensive line collapses and he gets crushed. So I don't have that level of concern. I do agree that if you're not going to let Cam be Cam, then you can't use him. It's why if you look at Cam's passer rating for his career, you're like, he's always been below average. But that's never been a fair way to evaluate him, because up until last season, he had scored more touchdowns running than any running back in football over the same time period since he's been in the league. He is a dominant goal line and short yardage player. I don't think that goes away. I think it was temporarily taken from him. The reason they didn't run him at the goal line in the game you're talking about is because he was still dealing with that foot sprain or the Liz Frank. If he recovers from that, which I don't think that's a career ender, then I think he's up for the Bears or the Titans, by the way. I think the Titans could use him immediately and be a dangerous football team.
We haven't really talked about, only Chicago is the only team we've talked about. Nick just mentioned the Titans. Are those the two teams you see as possible landing spots?
I think they make the most sense now. There's always a dark horse that could come into play. I mean, I look at what the Chargers are doing with Phillip Rivers and how much older he's getting. I think that could be a potential landing spot. And there's always sort of a team that's out there that you just don't see coming that could possibly be a trade. The problem is, if you trade for him, you get 1 year left on that deal, where I think it probably is a bargain, but then what are you going to get in return of that in the long term? And I think what Cam is going to want and what a team is going to want to pay him are going to be dramatically different. And I think that could be something that prevents him from getting the opportunity he's looking for.
You know what team has a quarterback on an expiring deal that's ready to win right now, whose quarterback's struggling this year, right? The New England Patriots. I'm just saying. Yep. It's a true fact that was stated there. Clippers Rockets.
Here we go.
Oh, that was a fun one last night.
Yeah.
Did Kawhi play? I didn't see him much on the defensive end.
Playing Houston last night in a potential Western Conference Finals preview. Kawhi Leonard, Nick, did decide to play. Whoo, Nick was happy.
Yes.
James Harden stole the headlines, perhaps also made Nick happy.
Yeah.
The beard went off for a game high 47 to go along with 6 boards and 7 assists. Rockets get the big win 102-93. Nick, we'll start with you. Who's better, Harden or Kawhi?
Well, let's think about this.
Okay.
One player has been far more durable. One player has, for a half decade plus, had to carry a team. One player has been, by the people who vote on such things, by all NBAs or by MVPs or by MVP finishes, has been clearly considered the better player. He scores more, he assists more, and yeah, it doesn't matter, he plays a lot more basketball. And that player is James Harden. He was also the far better player last night. And to score 47 with the allegedly the league's best defender guarding him. Hold on, I'm sorry. What's that? Oh, he didn't guard him. My apologies. Kawhi Leonard was stuck in the corner on P.J. Tucker defensively. Odd place for the two-time defensive player of the year to be. And that was when the Clippers, supposedly the best defense in basketball, weren't in a Jim Boeheim-esque zone defense, which you don't see very often from the best defenses in basketball. But I set that aside. There have been two moments in Kawhi Leonard's career he's been better than James Harden. The 2016 season and last year's postseason. At every other moment, James Harden's been better. Been considered better, has played better, eye test, stat test. Now, I know we are a prisoner of the moment, and the most recent thing that happens, the most important thing that happened, and last year's postseason, Kawhi Leonard was the best player in the NBA. But over the long term or short term, unless we're going tiny term window, Harden's been the better player, and this year he will prove to be the better player.
Your Honor.
Yes.
He just mentioned and threw that out there that Kawhi was the better player last postseason.
Yes.
As if that were 10 years ago, not 6 months ago. Because if we remember correctly, may I approach you like a hostile witness?
Please.
Because that is the way that you are acting.
Go ahead.
It was a 2-2 series between Golden State and Houston last May when Kevin Durant's calf injury first happened, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Who won game five? I'll answer for you.
Okay.
No. James Harden's team did not win game five.
Correct.
James Harden's team did not win game six on their home floor, again, without Kevin Durant and a Stephen Curry who went scoreless in one half. Okay, fine. Let's take that and move it to the next one. In the NBA Finals, who was the best player on that team on in that same situation?
Kawhi.
Okay. Don't just throw that out there as if it does not matter. You seem to gloss over those facts. You gloss over the fact that Kawhi is a two-time defensive player of the year. You gloss over the fact that Kawhi Leonard is a two-time finals MVP. So when the game matters the most, Kawhi has played the best. Yes, last night you are absolutely correct. When James Harden was not being guarded by Pat Beverly, he was exquisite. When he was guarded by Pat Beverly, he was 0-for-6 with 4 turnovers. Now, we can put that in its own box, correct? Because Kawhi Leonard was supposed to guard him.
Hold on, real quick. I just want to make sure I have that right.
Yes.
Because I didn't know that. James Harden last night was 0-for-6 with 4 turnovers when he was guarded by
Pat Beverly. Yes.
And in the game, I'm just looking, he was 12 of 26. So let me do that math real quick. Mm-hmm. So that means he was 12 of 20 with no turnovers when guarded by everyone else. Right? That was what that would mean?
Absolutely.
Correct?
Absolutely.
That everyone else includes Kawhi Leonard.
Sure.
Right? He was there. He wasn't load managing. I saw him there last night. And just real quick, you said I'm acting like last year's playoffs don't matter. It is not what I'm acting like. However,
if you are
making the case that Kawhi Leonard has been better than James Harden, you must act like last year's playoffs are the only thing that matters. Because going into last year's playoffs, it was a unanimous case. Harden had four top two MVP finishes. Kawhi had one. Harden had multiple scoring titles. Kawhi will never have a single one. Harden had led the league in assists. Kawhi is still searching for his first career triple-double and has won 10 assist game in his entire career. Harden has led the league in minutes and games played. Kawhi Leonard has twice found it within himself to play more than 68 games in a season and never once more than 74. So we can do the last thing that happens the most important. We can't do the last thing that happened is the only thing that happened.
Here's the thing, Nick. You can say Kawhi load manages during the regular season. Mm-hmm. I can tell you when James Harden load manages, June, because he ain't there. All right? Correct. So, and let's go there. If you can talk about MVP finishes, because I voted James Harden twice. I didn't mean it. I know you're here.
No.
I voted James Harden twice for MVP, including the year that Russell Westbrook won it. I voted for Kawhi Leonard twice in MVP. I get that. But you can say all those things and historically say that you want Kawhi Leonard on your team because he plays bigger, plays better, plays more complete when it matters the most. That other side of the floor matters. Playing in the NBA Finals matters. When James Harden played in the NBA Finals as a young pup, you know what he did? He went MIA. When Kawhi Leonard played in the NBA Finals as a young pup, you know what he did? He won MVP without being actually the best player on the floor, which says a whole lot.
Yeah, and that's a questionable MVP. First two games of the series.
Of course it is, because LeBron didn't win it.
No.
The MVP without LeBron.
It should be noted, the first two games of that series, Kawhi Leonard scored 9 points, and it's the second fewest points per game anyone's ever averaged in winning Finals MVP.
All right, I think I could be a neutral observer here, right? Because I'm not as anti-Kawhi or pro-Harden. I think I'm a neutral observer in this one. You said prisoner of the moment. I think in today's we are a prisoner of the playoffs, right? And where James Harden has disappeared, that is where Kawhi Leonard has risen to the occasion. There is no doubt James Harden is a better scorer. Like, no one would argue that point at all, but it is, you do play the game on both sides of the court. As you mentioned, I don't love the load management. I think Kawhi Leonard gets way too much credit for last year's finals, and so does load management. If the Warriors, you know, are healthy, I don't think he gets that MVP or the championship. Even that being said, I still think you have more evidence of Kawhi being clutch, being a performer in the playoffs than James Harden ever has. And maybe this is the year that James Harden can close that gap and actually get it done in the playoffs. But until he does, you have to lean with Kawhi.
But here's the reason you don't have to lean with Kawhi. And here's the reason the playoffs can't be all of it. Because as we have seen, Kawhi Leonard cannot single-handedly carry a team in the regular season.
And neither can James Harden.
No. What? We have seen him do it. What are you talking about? Now, by the time the playoffs come around, because he has had to do it, he does appear to be worn out, and his efficiency wanes, and all those things. But we've never seen the counterfactual, which is, could Kawhi do it? Because he's never been asked to. Last year, he was not asked to. In San Antonio, the one year where he was asked to, you know what happened to him in the playoffs? He got hurt.
After they won 67 games.
Yeah, and then that was the one year of his career he was better than Harden. 2016, I concede the point, Your Honor. But then you know what happened to him that postseason? He got hurt. Because you know what? It wears on you over the course
of
the year.
Or Zaza Pachulia like slides under your foot.
Except he was already dealing with an ankle injury in that postseason, and you know that to be true. It's just we do this thing. And by the way, Kawhi Leonard, by my math, is, as long as Kevin Durant's out, is the fourth best basketball player in the world. There is no shame in that. But there is at no point in Kawhi Leonard's career were people arguing that he was the best player alive until all of a sudden it became, well, clearly he is, even during the playoffs. First two rounds of the playoffs, who's the best player alive? Oh, it's got to be Kevin Durant. By the end of the second round, beginning of the third round, oh my God, Giannis is going to damn near sweep his way to the finals. And then it becomes the hottest of hot takes to be like, no, I think Kawhi's a top five guy, but not the best player in the league. And on the defensive point, holding on to Kawhi Leonard's Defensive Player of the Years right now is, to me, a little misleading. It is calling LeBron last season a multiple-time first-team All-NBA defender. It's true, but it's misleading. Because what are we seeing right now? Oh, when you have to be the guy that runs the offense, when you have to be the scorer and the distributor, if you are going to play minutes, now, and Kawhi's doing it while taking games off, you gotta rest sometime. And last night, they knew Kawhi was going to have to do something all the stars in the league do in big games. You got to play 40 minutes, kiddo. We're going to need you to play the whole fourth quarter and actually have played a lot of the first three quarters. And if we're going to need you to do that, stand in the corner and guard P.J. Tucker because the offensive end is more important. And because of that, the best player on the court went off for 47. So this whole thing, we kill Harden because for years he has stood in the corner. You know why? Because he's had to do what Kawhi is finally getting a taste of, what LeBron's had to do for 15 years, what Giannis is quietly doing in Milwaukee. So right now, it is still LeBron. Giannis is the only one that's very close, and Harden is scoring on a Chamberlain rate. Kawhi's a great player. We've elevated him to a level he's yet to show us more than for 3 weeks last postseason.
I can't believe I didn't answer my second question, who's better, LeBron or Jordan? But you know what? Man.
You still got the Clippers over the Rockets, by the way, Vinny?
When it matters, absolutely. Okay. Because when the Rockets don't do it,
I'm glad to know last night didn't matter.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.